Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 115 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson. And joining me, we have my co-host, Namali.
Hello.
And this week, we don't have as big a news as we had last week, like we had the Dragonflight talents. We have many smaller topics we're going to talk about. For example, the Fervent Strike changes to Shadowlands keys and what that means. Mostly it means your melee not get randomly one-shotting. Other Mythic Plus changes and trinket updates and just miscellaneous news. But before we get into that, how's your raid going?
Oh, it's fun. We're in Jailer Jail. For the probably the foreseeable future. And it's interesting. I already hate the fight, I think. And I hate the fight for the same reason I hated Azara, which is like I hate line of sight mechanics. Yeah. And like it's just it's a cluster of like watching people die as I run around like an idiot trying to get them in line of sight and like losing connection with the boss. And we also tried, like, we made a mistake for, like, probably the first 50 or so pulls of, like, trying to do a six stack of the blood. I think it's, like, the second blood or third blood soak that you do. I think it's the second one. It's, like, 240-ish in. Trying to do, like, a six stack there of the buff and just, like, literally generally dying or barely making it alive and then dying to, like, the next tank combo or the next, like, pull.
Right.
So we had to make some adjustments late in our raid night on Thursday to that, and then started making some decent progress into phase two. Saw phase two probably like four or five times with majority of the raid alive, got a little bit of the movement going. Saw one set of blood soaks there, and so that was fun. People not knowing where to point their character is always a good time. It's interesting. The room, if they did something different with the holes, I would have liked that fight so much. Like, it's just that phase one. Again, we haven't seen much into phase two. I think we're at like maybe 70% is our best attempt, like 68, something like in there. But phase one has just been, I hate it so much just because of line of sight stuff. So,
One of the things that I did that I think helped somewhat with the line of sight issues is I made a diagram that shows where, like, you're going to be able to see the boss, like, where the boss's line of sight is going to be after the pillars come up. And that is partially so that people know where not to stand to get mind controlled, right?
Oh, yeah.
But also we had people complaining rightfully about where we were positioning the boss and, like, what the line of sight or lack thereof was. So we made some adjustments. We made it to Raigalon last Sunday, or to through Raigalon onto the jailer last Sunday, and I did not have detailed enough phase one prep. Like, the line of sight stuff got us, but we got there, and then Friday we actually had a wild night. It was so I was in bed all day. I didn't do any prep, basically.
Yeah.
Our raid leader had to be out.
Oh, no.
And he found this out like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, God.
So one of the other officers like did a ton of the heavy lifting. And so we actually still had a pretty good raid night. We made it to phase two. And if not for some like walking into whole shenanigans at the end of phase one, we would have actually made it there with everybody alive.
Oh, awesome.
We did not successfully six stack the buff while doing that. So we have been planning to do the six stack, but have yet to successfully execute it.
Yeah.
We always like lose our buff before we refresh. So we'll see how that goes. This fight's very rippy. There's just so many things that it's just like, oh, you're dead now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had trouble. Or, sorry.
The worst part is like a mind control, you can kill them and then you can res them and that's okay. Yeah. When they fall in the hole and spawn on the far side of the platform, They're effectively removed from the fight. You cannot res them. You could have two reses up and you just can't res them.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember doing, we were doing just for fun, I level synced, what was it? One of the extreme trials from Final Fantasy with people from Brew Lounge.
Yeah.
Titan. And Titan's platform, one of the main things is you get knocked off the edge. And when you get knocked off the edge, your body doesn't come back up. So you can't be resurrected.
Yeah.
So if you died, you were just permanently dead.
Oh, God.
And that's what it feels like with this, where if you fall in a hole, it just puts you back at that fixed spawn point.
Yeah.
Like, really what it should do is it should put you back up next to the hole you fell in.
Yeah.
That would be the best.
Yeah. No, that would be nice. Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of holes, I mean, we also ran into a fun issue with, like, the weak lore that we used. Probably everybody uses to tell you what hole to jump in. So, like, the pizza slice one.
Yeah.
Some people, and they were like, oh, somebody, we had some issues with people, like, two people jumping in the same hole. And then they're like, well, mine said this, mine said that. And so we had a bunch of people turn on Discord streams. And we found out that, like, some of the guys' weak lore is, like, they had the wrong, like, order. So, like, when they got the bomb, the order was wrong. But if they didn't have bomb, the order was right, because you could still see, like, where people are going on, like, the weak lore that we use. So it was a very weird bug. So we had, like, everybody reload their UI, repush the note. And so we lost a couple of attempts, probably like 4 or 5 attempts or something like that, where, like,
yeah,
it just assigned, like, the person saw their assignment as wrong. And then, of course, like, our raid leader would be like, you jumped to the wrong hole again. And, like, our one warlock was like, it just told me back left. Like, he's like, turned on a stream or whatever. It was so weird. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no. Other than some weird stuff like that, it's one of those fights where, like, I think you need a consistent group, and you need a group of players that always goes to the same spot for each mechanic. I think that's, like, the biggest thing, is you can't just YOLO your movement or where you stand or what you do. Like, there needs to be very like pre-positioned, like, after, like, line of sight one and that sort of spread mechanic that comes, I always go to this spot, and everybody else goes to the same spot, and it doesn't, you know, you don't die, you don't get, you know, you're not, like, sort of moving all over the place. So we've been struggling a little bit with that. Got a little bit better late in the night, but we also had, like, roster issues. We had, like, two people out that were going to be in. Our raid leader has been, he sort of made the decision to 21st man raid lead jailer. So just so he can call everything out a little bit easier. But he was in the fight because we had roster issues. So it was a fun night. It's a fun progression, boss, I'll say. So
we have a bunch of people on vacation various weeks. Like, never enough at one time that we're going to be like, oh, we're canceling raid tonight.
Yeah.
But also too many to have, like, a consistent 20 people in every single night.
Oh, no.
So at least I think we're going to have a consistent healer comp and a consistent tank comp. So those should both be consistent. It's the DPS that are going to be shifting all over the place.
Oh, no.
It's going to be a mess. But that's a sneaky, sneaky way to lose progression time, is having to swap your comps around. Which we actually electively, like, we did rotations on Friday. We had, you know, a group of 20 in for the first 2 hours, then swapped people out and had another group in for the last 2 hours. And that's just because we knew we're gonna have to have people swapping anyway in a couple of weeks.
So
we might as well get ahead of the curve and just say we're swapping now while it's under our control, and we can go through this learning of phase one with everybody in here.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, that's fun. Well, cool. Yeah. Any other progressions? Oh, sorry.
One final note on the jailer. I have successfully managed to get Nia Zhao to tank the boss on multiple occasions now.
Interesting.
273k invoke Nia Zhao stomp crit.
Jesus.
I am now lobbying for PI because I am in the top 10 on DPS during the first minute of the fight.
That is hilarious.
His boss is stupid.
God, those shenanigans. Yeah,
my co-tank was previously a brew main, slash paladin main, and he played Blood DK for us this tier.
Yeah.
But we're talking right now about him swapping over and playing Double Brew on this boss.
Oh.
And it's not really, it's not for damage, because Blood DK is going to do better damage at the end of the fight anyway, I think.
Yeah.
Mine just looks better in the first minute, because it's all the right there.
Yeah.
But it is actually, I think, safer as Brewmaster, because Stagger still very good.
Yeah, yeah. Unless our Brewmaster actually got one shot on pull the other night.
Yeah,
yeah. Because he, yeah, I think the way they were doing
kick it, smash was, travel time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I also so there's a way that you can, if you speed taunt the jailer and then throw a keg at him, which is what you would normally do to like get threat, right? Like you would,
yeah,
you taunt and you would throw the keg so the damage is after the taunt lands, right? If you do that, your keg will miss. His hitbox is so wonky that the keg will entirely miss. It will not refresh your four-piece bonus.
Oh, God.
Which is significantly less dangerous now, but it will not refresh your four-piece bonus. It will not do damage. It will not apply the debuff that makes Breath of Fire give the dot with the damage reduction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jesus.
And it will not give shuffle.
I didn't. I don't think he realized that. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. Speed taunt, keg smash, didn't hit, and yeah, fell over.
To yeah, like 100 and, yeah,
it was like some ridiculous number.
I'm wearing a cheat death trinket because I'm also spamming sit on pull with invoke out. That's how I got 270k crit.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely had a couple pulls where I threw keg and somebody pulled early, and then I took an auto before the keg landed. Because I just had to taunt immediately, or they were going to take an auto, and it proc'd my cheat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's funny. Yeah, boss hits. Boss hits hard.
Uh-huh.
That is for sure. So, well, cool. Well, let's. I guess let's move forward a little bit. We'll get into some of the, I guess, the news for the week, and then we can talk about our main topic, some of the Mythic Plus changes that they made. So first up, I guess this is sort of just a non-WoW thing, but still a Blizzard game thing, is Diablo 4 beta pre-registration has opened up. So if you want to sign up for beta of Diablo 4, you can just go to diablo4.blizzard.com, log in, sign up, and go from there. And I'm actually excited about this. I don't know how much Diablo you've played.
I've played a decent bit of Diablo 3.
Yeah, I come back like every other season at this point. Maybe every third season, just to sort of mess around and see what's good, what's not. Game's still good. I think if they, based on what they're doing with Diablo Immortal, which I know they're not one-to-one in terms of like feedback, like in terms of like features and stuff like that, but if they take some of like the MMO or like the open world aspects that are in Diablo Immortal and like drop them in Diablo 4, I think Diablo 4 would be a, you know, another fun game. So
yeah,
it's very much
not be monetized by NetEase.
It's true. That is true. We won't have to,
or at least it better not be.
Oh god, that'd be awful. But no, it's beta's up. Beta signups are up for Diablo 4, so definitely check it out if you're into that stuff. So that was the one, I guess, non-WoW thing. Then we get back on the WoW train. Big Dragonflight news. The internal alpha for Dragonflight showed up on the Blizzard catalog. And if you know what this is, like, Blizzard publishes an endpoint. It's what their launchers use to download different versions of various clients. So you can publicly see this in the APIs. And they added a record for Dragonflight internal alpha. And so it's very, very new. There's actually no, I think there's no files behind it other than just an entry for the alpha. Right. And yeah, so interesting that alpha, I don't think this means alpha. I've said it's been 2 weeks away for the past month and a half. I think what this is just going to let people play from home, right? Like, so this is for like their employees to gain access to it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
This will eventually then sort of spider out probably what the general public uses to gain access to it. But for now, this is just, you know, their ability, their employee ability to gain access to the alpha outside of the office. Not naming any sources, but I can tell you that outside of the WoW team, I don't think anybody else has played it or has access to it at Blizzard employee wise. we're still a ways away from like.
For reference, that's normally the way that these rollouts go for these alphas, is the people on the game are playing the alpha first. Then other people in Blizzard Studios, other games, get access to it. And then it rolls out to friends and family, and then it goes out to the broader public.
Yep. Yeah. So this is probably for that studio-wide sort of alpha they're launching soon, and then we'll see, hopefully, friends and family shortly after that. Mid-July, maybe. Mid-July would be my guess at this point, if I was a betting man, about a month from now. So good news there. In other hotfix news, we can get to the hotfix section of the show. Rated PvP is now available cross-realm in North America. So if you remember, they disabled rated PvP from a cross-faction perspective at the launch of 9.2.5. And they just now have re-enabled it for NA. I don't know if it EU got enabled. I didn't see a post for Europe, but it's at least live in NA.
It is coming live with restarts, maybe. So this came up on Tuesday. Maybe it's up in the EU again, mark.
Maybe. I don't PvP. PvP.
Apparently it was all we talked a little bit about the hostility bugs and stuff like that, where things that were like pets and stuff being hostile to you when they were on your team in a cross-faction group. That was coming up in PvP and making ranked matches go sideways very fast.
Exactly.
So they turned it off, and now they have turned it back on. As far as I know, it's still on and still working, which is great.
Yeah, so if you want some cross-faction in your PvP, you can have that, at least in the rated versions. So, cool. So a couple other hotfixes in the raid this time. Really the big one, the only one I wanted to talk about, was the Rigelon hotfixes. They went live with Tuesday's reset. So he got a 5% health nerf on Mythic difficulty, and then a 15% auto attack damage nerf, which I don't...
The auto attack damage nerf is a joke.
Yeah. Our tank said they could feel it, but I'm like, I didn't notice your health moving too much.
Any less.
You're still super swinging.
From our kill, I can pull up our damage taken from auto attacks, and it's not high. I mean, it's not low, right? The boss hits reasonably hard. The problem is the boss hits every half second or some shit like that.
Yeah, super quick.
So the raw damage taken from auto attacks was... Oh, I can't look at that. So the damage taken from auto attacks was 1.2k for me, damage taken per second. And obviously there's stagger and dodge and stuff in there. Because he attempted to auto me 49 times and only landed a hit 23 times, right? My co-tank, a blood DK, attempted to be autoed 90 times, only got hit 41 times, and the blood DK 4-piece parry doing real work there. But that was also 4K. And if you look at how much of it they got healed, it's the real damage source on this fight is corrupted wounds. And they have in the note on this hotfix that they're reducing the melees across the board as he does significant tank damage, but they want to avoid altering current strategies around corrupted strikes. They could have nerfed corrupted strikes by 15% and it would not have changed anything about how you approach it. I don't really understand why they went for auto attacks. The auto attacks are not the punishing. If you screw up something with corrupted strikes, it probably kills you. Yeah. And nerfing it by 15% maybe doesn't move the needle on that, but the auto attacks definitely don't. So
yeah.
However, the health reduction, I think that after this health reduction, the correct strategy for everybody that's working on this boss now is to six heal it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just make it super safe. So.
Yeah, we six healed it before that nerf, and we were 12 seconds before Enrage, which is like not a ton of time, but it, with such a scripted fight, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. With another 5% off its health, I think just everybody should six seal this fight.
Yeah. 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 No, I agree. I agree. There's enough damage out there that you can make up that easily. Yeah. Particularly if your healers are doing damage. So yeah, it's an interesting nerf. The auto attack nerf is just weird, but I guess, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. Particularly, and who's giving them feedback to that? I would be.
I mean, I think what it is they know that the boss does a lot of damage to tanks, right?
Yeah.
And they know that there are some shenanigans with corrupted strikes, where if you fully absorb the hit, then it doesn't apply. And so what they're probably concerned about is some small frequent absorbs, like, you know, a power word shield or something, reaching the point that with stagger, a brewmaster can just fully absorb everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because if you nerf corrupted strikes too much, that could happen, and that's what they don't want that to happen. So I could see them being concerned about that happening if they nerf corrupted strikes too much, but then they also don't want to, like, if they removed that effect, like the fully absorbed thing, brewmaster would be like impossible to play on that fight.
yeah that's funny. Well, cool. All right. Well, I guess next up in terms of the just some updates is there was a rash of Mythic Plus just fight updates, I guess. So, you know, a lot of damage reductions. They did this last week, too. They sort of expanded this to a couple of other sort of fights. So, like, there's, you know, less absorb on Nathander Rimbinder, so the final boss of Necrotic Wake. His sort of absorb shield reduces, or sorry, absorb is reduced by 20%. Some more nerfs in Sanguine Depths. They received some last week, some more this week, in terms of just damage reduction on some of the bosses. The big one, though, that I think most people are kind of excited or should be good is actually the Theater of Pain nerf for Zav. That seismic leap damage, particularly as you get into... it's big in terms of just hierarchies. Like, there was... I know, like, I was talking to Meg, one of the Mistweaver Mythic Plus pushers, and from her perspective, like, you get to like the 28, 29 type key level. So fairly, I mean, I'd say extremely high. That's just a one shot ability, regardless of like the amount of versatility you may stack and even having defensives up. So this reduction sort of makes it a little less rippy in terms of that. So,
yeah, it's also the only non-boss nerf here is to the three mini bosses at the top of Spires of Ascension. They all had their health reduced just by 20%. And then Aura of Intimidation, which is the stacking... Wait, which one's that one? Is that the final one, that just pulsing damage that happens from that?
I believe so,
yeah. That got nerfed by 20%, which is good. Those things sucked. So glad that they are going to be less of a pain. Going to make that dungeon, actually, I would say, quite a bit easier on Fortified than it currently is, because that's the scary part on Fortified right now. And then the other thing for just doing Loki is Castigate damage reduction for Executor Tarvold, aka the second boss of Sanguine Depths. I don't know if this is really an issue in high keys, because there's so many ways to remove the damage from this ability. But in Pugs, you're not removing the damage from this ability. So it's a very good nerf for people that are just doing, you know, Pug keys or keys with a comp where maybe like one person can remove Castigate. And if it targets any of the other three non-tank players, then you're just like, you got to eat the damage. It's a good nerf.
Yeah. So it'll be nicer in terms of like the highest level. I mean, definitely like your 15s, if you're doing those just once a week, right? It'll be easier based on this. But in terms of like where these really come into play is as that scaling gets really high. It lets you basically push maybe a key level or two above what you're doing right now at the top end. So,
and some of these like Castigate that have ways for certain classes to remove the ability, it also helps equalize it between different classes. Cause like, that's not a nerf if you're already removing every Castigate. Like if you're running two hunters and I don't know what other one could do it like on CD, but like a hunter can feign death basically every castigate. Like, as long as they don't get targeted twice in a row, they can feign everyone. I think you can turtle ones that you don't, if you get targeted twice in a row and you rely on not getting targeted four times in a row.
Yep.
if you get targeted four times in a row, you just die and you suck it up and you use a B-res. But they can do every other one. So like for them, it's not really that much of a nerf if your comp is already built in a way that you're not getting the effect in the first place. But then it equalizes things for if you're a Windwalker that can't remove that effect, then this lets you push higher than you could before.
Exactly. Yeah. So good changes there, just in terms of like, to your point, like normalizing sort of maybe the power difference between certain classes based on their utility and tools. So, well, cool. So real one final, this is a hot off the presses topic. It's not actually in our notes, but I'm going to throw this out there. So this actually came up, if you guys aren't aware, outside of the realm of just World of Warcraft and sort of Blizzard stuff, right now there's like basically like the Summer Games Fest going on, which essentially is like the replacement for E3. So like a bunch of game studios are having their big announcements. The Microsoft one is going on right now as we're talking over this. And one of the components of one of the games just announced on the Microsoft one is actually Overwatch 2. So they announced their early access is going to begin this October. So October 4th, they're releasing both for Xbox and PC early access or Overwatch. Along with, they did a quick overview of a brand new hero. So there's one new hero coming in called the Wastelander. So Overwatch 2, October this year, for early release, early October. So probably a little later in October for general release. To Xbox and PC, and a new hero. So other Blizzard stuff. To be fair for me, the Overwatch, I never really got into it too much. I like the PvE modes where like it's you and a team versus like a bunch of bots, but I'm not a big I wasn't a big Overwatch person. So
yeah, I have some friends. The only times I've played Overwatch are when friends are into it. And so I have a group of friends that are into it right now. So I've been playing with them. But it's pretty funny being like, I've owned this game since release, effectively. And I have not, like, when you level up in that, you get up to level 100, then you go back to 1 and you gain a star. Yeah, I have 0 stars. I've owned this game since release, and some of the people I'm playing this with now have now eclipsed me in level in significantly less time.
Yeah. That's hilarious. All right. So sorry for sort of throwing them off there, but sort of hot off the presses. Some cool games coming.
Awesome. Yeah. Overwatch 2, no longer vaporware.
No, it'll be real, which I don't know what the difference is yet between Overwatch and Overwatch 2. Because everything works in both, but they're releasing an Overwatch 2. So.
Yeah. Cool. So one of the big things that has happened over the past week is something that we have been in the tank community asking for since the start of BFA. There's this kind of ability. This is part of our main talking. This is kind of ability called a Fervent Strike after the most noticeable case of this ability in Atal Dazar in Battle for Azeroth, where one of the just very common trash mobs in that dungeon has this Fervent Strike ability that targets the tank if the tank is in range. And if the tank is not in range, it targets whoever is in range. And in theory, this is obviously some kind of like anti-kite mechanic, right? Like it's intended for the tank to just not be out of range, because if the tank is out of range, then you're going to lose your melee DPS or your melee healer or just a range that happened to be standing nearby. It's so common that you just lose a DPS to this mechanic. It's very frustrating. But what it really doesn't take into account, and the reason that these were a problem, is twofold. First, there are just actually Mythic Plus affixes that force the tank to kite.
Yeah.
Like, Fervent Strike mechanics mixed with Necrotic is just one of the two you had to go. Necrotic's been nerfed multiple times since then, so it's not as kite-y as it used to be. But there's still, as we'll see, we're going to go through the list of all the different fervent strikes that they had in Shadowlands that they started removing.
Right.
And there's a ton of them. Just yes. a ton. And pre-nerf and even current necrotic forces your tank to kite in a way that's going to trigger the oops, your DPS is dead mode on these abilities. Yeah. The second thing is that most tanks have a melee kick. So when you're grouping up mobs and you need to get a caster in, if you as the tank step out to get a kick, you run the risk of losing a DPS to Fervent Strike. And so just any kind of melee kick or CC, anything like that, if you step out to pick up a mob that maybe was wailing on your healer, then if Fervent Strikes could kill a DPS, it just, like, these mechanics don't play nicely with how dungeons actually play.
Yeah.
It's honestly kind of shocking to me. Like, it's been almost 4 years that we've had to deal with these abilities, and they're finally removing them.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you would, even not thinking about, like, tanking, or sorry, about kiting or doing something like that, but even movement, like, as a pack is dying and you're moving to the next pack, like...
Sanguine is another case where this would happen, where you would have a pack starting to die, so you would have to be moving. And you wouldn't really be, like, kiting. You wouldn't be out of range of the mobs in a meaningful sense, but you would be out of range of maybe one of these dudes towards the back of the pack, and he would start casting his Fervent Strike and just wallop your DPS, and now you're eating the 5 second penalty timer and your DPS is running back while the rest finish up the pack. And there's not anything you can really do about that. You can't track the cooldown on every single one of these abilities on every single mob in the pack. Yeah. And also you can't leave them sitting in the Sanguine, or you can't sit there tanking with Necrotic up.
Exactly.
There's a ton of cases where you just, oops, we lost a DPS. It's the worst when it's like at the start of a pull, somebody's hit their CDs.
Right.
And they eat a Fervent Strike to the face and die. And then the pulls, like, depending on what pull it is, like, if it's just a single pack pull, you're probably fine.
Right.
But if you're trying to pull together multiple packs and the DPS just eats shit and dies, pull's probably dead.
Yeah, you're just too far behind at that point. So, yeah, I mean, this is a really... So, at least we can get into it, but yeah, they're essentially not removing the abilities from the mobs. The way that they're changing this is they're basically giving the abilities a range. So before, a lot of these abilities were melee range abilities, which meant anytime you as a tank were out of melee range, it would, you know, attack its closest target. So the idea is that they're now adding a range component to those. So I think it's 10-yard range for most of them, which means, like, as long as the tank's within 10 yards of the mob, they'll still be an eligible target for the tank buster, which should help your melee. So it's not... I think it's a good compromise, or, you know, not allowing your tank to literally run halfway across the room and slowly sort of kite these mobs along, but it still gives you some wiggle room.
Yeah, I don't think that's really that much of a concern with how threat is. Like, threat, you're not going to hold threat if you are kiting the way that you could in Legion. So I don't think that's too big of a concern right now. Even with, like, double Mr. X, if you're playing two survival hunters, you're not going to be able to just run all over the place away from the mobs and not actually hit them while being misdirected. But yeah, there's a lot of these, just a ton of these. So this is from the first set of data mining done by Wowhead. So there's actually a first one that's funny, Beak Slice. The birds in the Ardenwield wing of the other side have this dot that they put on you from Beak Slice. And that had actually a 20-yard range, so it was like an anti-fervent strike. Like, it would, if you were out of range, go on a DPS.
Yeah.
But also, the range was so big that it was very difficult to actually outrange without doing the, like, insane kiting that people were doing in Legion. So you would run into this situation where you needed to drop your Beak Slice stacks, and the only way to do that was to actually, like, fuck off to the far corner of the map effectively to outrange them.
Yeah.
And then they'd start beak slicing other people, but it was like taking one of these ones, the real damage comes from stacking the dot. So taking one, at least in a low key, is perfectly fine. Unlike some of these other ones that will just kill people if they go on someone else. And then we've got a couple others. We've got the Haymaker from Tazavesh, that had its cast time increased and its range slightly increased. We have the Shield Bash from, I think this is in Theater of Pain, had its range increased and doesn't do the Fervent Strike anymore. So there's still a number of other mobs that were not initially, initially included in this change. But there's a bunch of these, just like Beak Slice, Deadly Thrust, Shred Armor on the Mist Veil Matriarch and Mist of Tyrna Scythe, Haymaker, Shield Bash. And then we got a second round of hotfixes a couple days later, that went through. So the Relics Deconstruct, Headless Clients Discharge, which I did not actually know this was a Fervent Strike. These things, the Headless Clients in DOS, they like do their own thing where they do the spinning and they just follow people around and then they're just out of range of you. I guess that means that they discharge other people instead of discharging the tank. I had no idea this was supposed to go on the tank. I thought it was randomly targeted. But there's like, just going through this list, there's boss abilities in here. Cytotoxic Slash from the third boss of Plaguefall is a Fervent Strike ability. So if your tank is running around picking up the spiders that spawn, when she casts this, she can put the dot on a non-tank. And it's a dot. It's probably not going to kill them. But why?
Yeah, no, I don't. It feels like some of these abilities, right, if we think about it, is like, it's the, I'm like Blizzard, like any company, I bet you it's just like a template, right? Like, so they have a bunch of template abilities and like they especially, just pick the Fervent Strike template, right, by accident.
Yeah. I suspect that a ton of these are them picking the Fervent Strike template ability. Some designer somewhere looked at the lack of kiting in BFA keys and decided, or the relative lack of kiting compared to Legion, and decided that Fervent Strikes were a great success and said, this is what we're using as our template from now on.
Yeah.
And they just copied and pasted. And that was a mistake. But there's just, there's like, Plaguefall has four of these. Theater of Pain has five different Fervent Strike abilities, including some of these. So there's two of these on the big, or three of these on the big named mobs in the war wing or whatever it's called. Zav's wing, and those things will one shot people if you don't get in range. And some of these also line up with, like, there's ones where you have to step out because there's a circle slam on the ground, and if a demon hunter charges back in before you get back in, they can get slammed.
Yeah, no, it's a really good change, I'll say, in terms of just like making tanks' lives, like, or at least your group's lives, somewhat easier. And still keeping like the range makes sense. Still keeping like the relative difficulty there of, like, you know, making sure you keep threat, making sure that like the damage is still out there on the tank. So like healing wise and even defensive wise, like you still have to manage that from a health perspective. So no, it's interesting that they I don't know, not that every mob needs to be ranged, right? But like the idea of like some of these like very high damage abilities not being considered ranged, which is some of the silly movement that is just, even if you just think about, like, we talked a lot about tanking or moving or things like that, but even if you're like, if there's something on the ground and you're shifting out of it, like mobs will take weird paths, put them out of range, and then they get one shot.
I would say that these abilities have never, ever, in any case, accomplished their intended goal of keeping tanks from kiting. In BFA, the change that pushed us away from the, you know, massive kite meta was the threat change.
Yeah.
And since you had to actually do damage to the mobs to generate threat, you just had to stay there and tank the mobs.
Exactly.
The Fervent Strikes were never really a part of the equation. They were just a very frustrating element that comes up actually a lot. Like with season 3 in Shadowlands, it's been way less pronounced because of actually just how powerful tanks are right now in terms of defensive. So you can just like sit there and eat stuff to the face, even even in a 20. You just like pull it back, eat it to the face, and then move on to the next one. And everybody does so much damage, and the tank is so tanky that you just like time a 20 by pulling one pack at a time and pressing W.
Yeah, exactly.
But in season one of Shadowlands, where we weren't that tanky and DPS didn't do that much damage, and you know, learning the hard way which abilities were fervent strikes, was always a negative experience.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's God. Yeah. It's always tough to with that type of stuff. So, but these are, I mean, in general, good changes. I think I guess the other thing to note too, as we sort of talk about this, is they've also made these updates to some of the season, I guess four, they're calling it season four new dungeons. So like Grimrald Depot, Karazhan, Mechagon.
Right. So the reason these are called Fervent Strike abilities is actually they didn't really exist prior to Ataldazar. It was just a part of the game. If you were out of range for a spell and they wanted to cast a spell on you, they just wouldn't cast the spell.
Right, yeah.
They wouldn't pick another target. The only exception is actually auto attacks. If you root, and you can still see this happen, if you root a mob, it will attack whoever it can within range. Which, you know, usually if you're a mage and you press Frost Nova, it means you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's happening with these other abilities in like Grimrail Depot or Karazhan is not the turning off the Fervent Strike piece of it. It's increasing the range so that they can more reliably cast on the tanks, even when the tanks are slightly out of the melee range.
Right. Right. Yeah. Which is, I guess they're getting ahead of it, right? Like I think the idea now is they have a different, I don't think they've actually, Blizzard hasn't posted anything on this just yet. Officially, but it seems like from just a design philosophy perspective, they're testing out this sort of now making these tank buster abilities or fervent strike abilities like have a range, like not getting rid of them, but giving them a range so that you sort of remove, you know, the random one shots of your DPS.
Yeah, players, they've got developers' notes attached to both sets of hotfixes. So the first one says, with the following hotfixes, our goal is to address circumstances in Shadowlands dungeons where enemy spells could be cast on nearby melee targets when their current target moved out of range, sometimes leading to unfair player deaths, which is exactly what would happen, right?
Right.
All the time. And in the second one, it says, in the second batch of updates, we've addressed more circumstances, blah, 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 which could sometimes lead to unfair deaths or encourage groups to avoid bringing melee DPS entirely. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
It's... which that was a way to solve this. If you didn't bring any melee and you didn't bring a melee healer like a Mistweaver or a Paladin, then you couldn't trigger these effects.
The only person in range would be the tank at that point, and then zero people in range, right?
If the tank and so they wouldn't cast on anybody.
Yeah, yeah. That's God. That's an awful way to look at it. In terms of that. But no, I, to be fair, at the key levels I do never really. Was an issue, right? Like the damage wasn't enough. Like definitely people would get chunked, but the damage wasn't high enough that you get one shot in many cases. For me personally, I understand the change. It's great. But I don't know if people really realize most of this, if they're not really pushing sort of like the 18, 19, 20s, right? Where this becomes much more deadly. I think in the 15,
even in 15s in season one, these would one shot people. Like these were
that's true, yeah, early on, yeah.
But like season three, you're absolutely right. Season three, they don't. And at 15, they're not going to one shot a person that's like reasonably geared.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. But no, yeah, I think, you know, awesome fervent strike changes. So,
This has been such a long time coming. It is very nice, and it's also encouraging about Dragonflight, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because
this means that they are not going to put these abilities in Dragonflight.
Yep.
And that's just great because these abilities are the most anti-fun thing in dungeons. It's just like you didn't do anything wrong, but we're gonna kill one of your group members anyway. Exactly. Don't you like keys?
Don't you like keys? Yeah, no, yeah. It's definitely it is interesting. It's good set of changes. So
yeah.
So cool. Anything else on the Fervent Strike stuff before we do this this little tank trinket update, which I thought we talked about maybe, but
we did talk a little bit about it. There's been, so we can, I guess, jump right into that. Yeah. So we're talking about Codex of the First Technique. So what this trinket is, it drops from streets from the last boss there, technically, if you're doing the normal non-Mythic Plus version of the dungeon. Mm-hmm. It basically has a proc that will give you a buff. And while you have this buff, it absorbs 10% of the damage that you take and reflects that damage back to whatever hit you. Sounds great. Slight problem. It used to, this is not how it works anymore, but it used to also affect environmental damage or damage without a source, which is what environmental damage is. It would also affect personal damage. So damage you did to yourself, like stagger. And so what would happen is that damage doesn't have a source, so it didn't know where to reflect the damage, but it would still reflect it to whatever you were currently targeting.
Yep.
So this is something that caused a quite large number, I would say, of keys to get totally ripped by someone pulling a pack accidentally by targeting a mob, just tab targeting while Codex was up. You know, having a dot ticking on them or stagger ticking on them and pulling the mob, which then pulls the pack and wipes your key. So that had ways that it could be abused. I know for a fact that there were people that would use it to pull stuff through walls and miss a Tyrna Scythe because there was no line of sight check. You could actually, if you could target it, you could do this anywhere, like anywhere you could target things through a wall, you could pull it. Because it didn't check line of sight before doing damage. So what would happen is they would use this, basically be a brewmaster. You always have stagger ticking that always triggers out whatever you target, and you pull stuff through walls. Yep. So obviously, there's like some abusive behavior there of like using this trinket to do pulls that shouldn't be possible. And then also some real negative consequences for not knowing the bugs with this trinket where you accidentally wipe your key because you just like pull a pack from halfway across the instance and they bring three packs of friends with them and you can't handle that and you die.
Yeah.
So this trinket got two changes, undocumented changes in 9.2.5. The first one was that they made it so it no longer reflects damage without a target. So if you take environmental damage or stagger damage, it is no longer reflected at all. It will still get absorbed, but it will not be reflected, which is, at least for Brewmaster, a very noticeable damage to the trinket. Just that by itself, no other change to the trinket, is around a 40% nerf to the damage that you get from the trinket. Because of how much damage you would get from it reflecting stagger.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah. So you can still high roll with this trinket. Like one of the reasons that people love this trinket, it's a bad trinket. Don't wear it. It was bad before this. It's bad now. Don't wear it. Is because you could high roll it. You could have it line up. It could proc exactly when you're taking a ton of damage. And as a result, do a ton of damage. That comes with the downside of it. It can proc while you're not taking very much damage. While, you know, using Rigolon as an example, because Rigolon is like the highest tank damage boss, right? It could proc while you're actively tanking the boss, going into a gravitational collapse, and you could just have an absolute monster proc of Codex of the First Technique because it just lined up with all the damage that you're taking. Or it could proc immediately after your co-tank picks up the boss from you, and you just sit there like having small amounts of ticking damage for the next 15 seconds until you pick the boss back up, and the proc could do effectively nothing. So it's a very high variance trinket. It's one that has very, very, very high highs and still does have high highs. You can look at ranks from Brewmasters from 9.2.5, and this trinket does show up still in top ranks because it has the ability to high roll to such an extreme degree compared to other trinkets.
Right.
But in the average case, it's awful. And in the average case, it was like not great, but still like the high roll was high enough that you could still get away with it, like still justify using it in 9.2. But with the change to how it interacts with stagger, you can't. And I don't think they're reverting this change. I think this change is permanent because I do think that they have correctly identified that A, the way people were using this trinket to pull stuff through walls was bad. And right, B, the way that people were accidentally ripping their keys by pulling other packs with this trinket was also bad. And there's other ways that they could fix that that would restore the stagger functionality. But effectively what was happening is that stagger was double dipping with Codex. Because it would reflect the pre-stagger damage, and then it would reflect the damage taken from stagger.
Oh, okay.
So it was actually double dipping.
Interesting. So okay, so it would reflect. That's I didn't realize that was the interaction with Brewmaster. So it would reflect the hit unmitigated by stagger, and then also the ticking stagger damage. Yes. So you basically get the stagger damage for free.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So that's huge. The second change is they reduced the absorb. Let me see if I can find the exact number. I can't find it now. Okay. Basically, they reduced the way the trinket works is it has a cap per individual hit that you get that on how much damage gets redirected or absorbed. And this did scale and it got broken. So effectively what happened is it was like you were all wearing a minimum eye level version of the trinket. The amount that it would reflect from any individual hit was capped at like 2000.
Yep.
Which like Brewmaster's already eating a 40% hit to the damage of the trinket. Now everybody eating another massive amount off of the trinket's values. This one did get fixed. They did hot fix the trinket to restore the scaling. So at least for, you know, if you look at like a blood decay, they're still going to get roughly the correct amount of damage.
Yeah.
But for example, on Regalon, there's a bunch of environmental damage that is now no longer going to get redirected even for a blood decay. It's not just a Brewmaster thing. So it's still an effective nerf in a lot of scenarios, but not a huge one in the way it is for Brewmaster. However, Shrink has been very, very controversial in like the tank community because there's been this feedback loop of like people doing very, very high keys and people getting like high ranks on logs. On Regalon specifically, using this trinket. And other people going, oh, they're using this trinket. It must be a good trinket. I'm going to use that. And using it. And it just dramatically underperforming. Because the trinket scales with the amount of damage that you take.
Gotcha. So basically, it's one of those, it's like another, like, yeah, like, it's just tanks gaming the system that is, like, taking more damage as the trinket procs to basically up the amount of damage the trinket will do.
There's that, but there's also like a 30 does more damage than a 15, right? Like by a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So you're looking at a streamer that's like a big key pusher. They're wearing Codex in a plus 28, right? It's actually, prior to 9.2.5, actually would be probably very good, one of the best options there. Because it's a plus 28 and they're getting absolutely trash canned. And basically at any point that trinket procs, it's going to do huge damage.
Right.
Your 15 is not like that. Your 15 is doing like 10% of the damage that a 28 does. And so when you wear this trinket, you're losing a ton of value that you could get by wearing literally anything else. Not literally anything. These are real bad trinkets, this expansion, but wearing a lot of other trinkets. There is a tool that got built that I can't pull up because I don't have any logs with Codex on it because I don't have a Codex. But which does a analysis of how much damage you would have done with Codex versus any other trinket. You give it a log and it just tells you, okay, how much damage would you have gotten from Codex versus another trinket? And almost every single time, you would get more damage from another trinket.
Gotcha.
It's not until, like, Rigelon sometimes would give you more damage from Codex, especially as, like, a Blood DK, which takes a lot of unmitigated hits. Mm-hmm. Brewmaster, the same thing prior to the stagger change. So there was, like, one specific boss that it was worth using Codex on for two classes, and that was Rigelon. And it is definitely not worth using in the average case now. So there's this thing that people in the Final Fantasy community do, the parsing community, where they will do crit runs, crit farming, where they will run. There's no lockouts in Final Fantasy, so they can just run the same dungeon or the same boss over and over again.
Okay.
And they will keep running it over and over and over and over and over and over to try and farm better crits.
Interesting.
So if you get a crit on, like, your big finisher ability or whatever, that's obviously, like, way better than getting a crit on whatever auto attack, right?
Right, yeah.
So they'll run it to try and get better luck with crits. And there are logs from the previous expansion. There was somebody that ran the first boss of the last tier there over 400 times farming crits.
Interesting.
That's the kind of scenario now that you would wear Codex in. That's what you would use Codex for. It's for fishing for good procs to YOLO your way to rank one by, like, playing okay and having Codex do just, like, stupid damage by getting extremely lucky.
Yeah.
But if you're progressing Rigelon right now, do not wear this trinket, like, under any circumstances. Just wear a different trinket. You would be better off wearing, like, if you've got a scale, this is one of the boss. A lot of raid bosses' scale from DOS is not particularly good. On Rigelon, it's actually, like, fairly compelling because of the way it removes. You can use it to reset your stacks of corrupted wound.
Gotcha.
Because you can fully absorb the hit. And that is super, super good. So, take it off. Put on a different trinket. Like, you've got other trinkets. Don't wear Codex.
That's so funny.
And if you do still see, like, streamers and high-end key pushers wearing this dungeon, know that it's a different world in a plus 30.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, and I think, you point to that where it's like, you need to take a ton of damage for this to do a bunch of damage. That's why you see the top and do it. And then also, like, I think you also have probably a similar thing of, like, high-rolling it, right? Like, getting a proc.
Yeah,
when you're taking that damage is also, like, key to those those parses. So,
right,
that's great. And so
it can proc from any instance of damage that you take. Right, a lot of raid bosses have just environmental ticking damage going out basically all the time. So even if you're not actually tanking the boss, you can still have the trinket trigger. Like, imagine something like, I guess, the Rigelon example again. Somebody takes the boss off of you, Quasar triggers, there's the damage event from that, and Codex triggers. You're not tanking, you're not taking a ton of damage. Trinket proc is just wasted, and it doesn't trigger that often. The proc rate on it, let me pull up. So the buff duration is 12 seconds long, which is conveniently short enough to fit in between tank swaps, even on Rigelon, which is a very frequent tank swap fight. It is 2.5 procs per minute, roughly. Okay. So in a 5 minute fight, right, you're looking at 12 to 13 procs. If you have one that gets wasted, you're looking at losing like 8% of your trinket's damage. If you have two that get wasted, you're losing 15-20% of your trinket's damage.
Yeah,
that's why it's high variance,
right? Yeah, so tough. Yeah, I think the other interesting thing too about all this is that all of this was undocumented, right? Like, hasn't been a post at all by Blizzard, right, about these changes, about any of the stuff going on the trinket. Yeah, which is it. Maybe that's the other side of this too. Is like that's always the annoying part. I'll say about when Blizzard makes changes and doesn't say anything. It's just. You don't know, like, I guess you don't know why. I mean, I'm assuming the why here is just that they didn't like the fact that you could pull things, right? Like, through walls. Like, I think that's maybe the biggest one. And then the scaling one, maybe they didn't like the fact that you could high roll it as well. It is a dungeon trinket.
I mean, the scaling stuff did get nerfed.
Yeah.
Or reverted. So it's back to the way it used to be.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I guess the damage part of it's just it's a weird, they did not even come out and say it, right? Like,
Yeah.
Cause I think that's the one thing I think Blizzard sometimes, I don't know, they need to do more of is just like communicate changes like this. Even if it like, if you weren't a part of maybe the high end community and realized why they were using this trinket or what people were doing with this trinket, you don't understand why it was nerfed, right? You may not be able to take advantage of it. And like the fact that they don't come out and at least say this just leaves the whole fun of like figuring out what they actually changed and like what it does and what it means to like the community to like sort of guess. It's like similar to like the Fallen Order changes for like Mistweaver and Haste and stuff like that.
Right.
Like the fact that like they talk all about the fact that like Haste affects Fallen Order. We saw no like incident of it until we could start stacking enough Haste to like see a noticeable difference. And then it's all the fun of like having a breakpoint, which is like so stupid. But I don't know. Like this sort of bothers me a little bit in terms of like whenever they do changes like this, it's just, unless somebody like figures it out and like is watching closely, it's sort of I feel like this is maybe one of those things where like somebody random in Discord was like, in a Discord channel for tanks was like, hey, I noticed something weird with this trinket. And then like a bunch of people were like, no, nothing's changed. And one person maybe takes a look at it like, oh man, this is different. Like what's going on here? And so, and then like nobody realizes it. So
it got noticed fairly quickly because, the damage of this trinket got absolutely dumpstered the day of the
match. I guess in this case, it's a little bit easier to notice if it's 40% right? reduction. Like
Right. For Brewmasters, immediately after the patch, it would have been something like 60 or 70% reduction between the nerf to the absorb size and the nerf to the stagger interaction.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
So, yeah, it's... And to kind of cap everything off with this trinket, it's the kind of effect that is honestly like, it's neat to think about, but hilariously awful to play with in practice. Because what it incentivizes is doing super degen things to take more damage. Like you were referencing earlier, like what I'm doing, Invoke Niazal for Brewmasters has the same kind of effect. You take damage, you deal damage. There's no cap on Invoke Niazal. Well, the cap is your health bar. You don't die, you're good. So what that leads to is like on pull on the Jailer right now, I use Sit in order to take increased damage during my Invoke Niazal.
Right. Yeah.
And it's worth it. Like I have hit close to 30k DPS in my opener. Because if you get Niazal stomp crits with huge amounts of purified damage in it, it's just an insane amount of damage.
Right, yeah.
And it's actually relatively safe in that specific scenario because I'm playing around it in a way where I know I don't need that cooldown later, so I use it there and I have it back when I need it. But it's in general like, if you wanted to like max parse on that boss, you would do that every single time you had Niazal up, not just in the first 15 seconds of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Talking to more tanks, it reminds me of MOP a little bit and the, like, what was the ability?
It's exactly what it is. Resolve.
Resolve. Yeah. Where like, I remember doing, what boss was it? It was the last boss in Hellfire, not Hellfire. Black, was it Black Hand? Yeah, where you'd like go to the different worlds or like different scenarios, right, to fight the Shah, and like at the end of each one of these worlds, there was a Shah that did our frontal, and I remember our tanks would literally, you could dodge it. It would always point at one player, and you'd have to get out of it. But our tanks would sit in it to max out their resolve to then do more damage during that phase.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's that all over again. So instead of like saving cooldowns for like taking big hits, you intentionally take big hits and use your cooldowns there to then like get more damage. So it's an interesting thing. It's, I, to be fair, like I just don't, I, for me, I'm just old, I guess. I hate that sort of play style, but I see why people, particularly tanks, enjoy it. Yeah,
I don't like it. I don't like it. It is neat to think about. It is neat in theory. Like, oh yeah, if you're taking tons of damage, you get to do more damage. Oh yeah, that's so cool. Except for the fact that how much damage you take is largely under your own control.
Right, yeah.
So all it takes is somebody going, oh, 2+2, I can survive this if I press Zen meditation.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'll do a ton of damage right afterwards. It'd be great. Yep. I'll get, you know, I'll be so, number 19 on the list instead of 20. Awesome.
The saving grace of Invoke Niuzhao, the only reason that it is not as degenerate as it would otherwise be, is that it is tied to stagger. And stagger is tied primarily to physical damage. Raid mechanics are magic damage. So you are relatively limited in what you can do with it. But
gotcha.
There are certain... Like, this is where, like, sitting comes in on the jailer, right? So the main source of physical damage on that fight is his auto attacks on the tank. Mm-hmm. And you can dodge those, but you don't want to dodge them while you have Invoked Niuzhao up, because dodging them means you don't get to feed damage to Dave.
Oh, God, yeah.
So you sit. You can also back tank it, but sitting has a second advantage. Advantage. Real big air quotes here. Real big air quotes on advantage. You can get crit.
Yeah.
While you sit.
Are they still called Crushing Bros?
No.
Not anymore.
Oh, okay. It's an actual crit. It turns off your crit immunity.
Oh, that's interesting. That's funny.
Which then doubles the damage you get to feed to Dave, as long as it doesn't kill you. Which, you're a brewmaster, you have stagger. It would have to basically turn off stagger for it to kill you from a single hit.
Yeah. Yeah, God, yeah, it's just, I don't know, that part of the game, I agree, it's interesting to think about. It's just, like, so degenerate and, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It makes, like, Brewmaster rankings really frustrating as well when you look at, like, the rank one on Guardian of the First Ones last tier for Brewmaster had, 800,000, 1,000,000, stomp damage.
Yeah.
And if you were playing legit and not like sitting during your Invoke Niuzhao, you were getting like 200,000, maybe 250,000 to 300,000.
Yeah.
So somebody like cheesing Invoke Niuzhao is literally getting triple the value from the cooldown that you are.
Yeah.
And exactly. The cooldown's already doing 10% of your damage when you're not cheesing it. So you can't really go for like high ranks as a brewmaster unless you're doing dumb things with Invoke Niuzhao.
Yeah,
like you can go for like a top 20 rank, but top 10 by the time you get this deep into a tier is typically just the 10 people that have done the most degen things with Invoke Niuzhao.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Oh man. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. It's a cool thing to think about, I think, but just not something that I really participate in. It's the same thing with people like from a healer perspective, you can think of the same thing as like healers doing a bunch of damage. And it's like, why doesn't our 4-piece increase our damage? Or like, why doesn't, what's the best DPS rotation or DPS trinkets? Like most healers have like 3 DPS buttons. The rotation is like you hit one all the time and then maybe you hit another one that has a cooldown in the middle, right? And so it's, that part of the conversation, interesting to think about. I'm not a huge fan of it. So, in terms of like playing into that type of stuff. So, but cool. I think we started at the top of the episode. There wasn't a ton to talk about this week. We're sort of in a little bit of a content, like we're sort of in our jailer slog fest, of progression and there's not a ton of news coming out of Blizzard, at least right now. The Fervent Strike stuff we talked about today, I think, is really cool. Sets up for a fun season 4. Whenever that's coming out, but not too much.
There's 2 Fervent Strikes in the Tazavest dungeons. I don't think there's any in Mechagon, and there's none in Karazhan, and none in the Wad dungeons. So they're removing all of these just in time for it to all go away.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know.
Just in time. We probably have a couple more months of season 3, right?
Yeah. At least for a little bit longer, and then it'll be season four, and it'll be crazy town. I feel like USA with what's going to happen there with all the different changes and stuff like that. So,
yeah. But this might end up just being a relatively short episode today, ending a little bit early.
I think so. I don't want to hold people here. I don't want us to just ramble on for the next.
We can definitely ramble on. Yeah, like, if we wanted to ramble on, we have those 3-hour episodes to prove it.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah. Plus, I think there's a ton of that games festival stuff coming out. So
Bethesda. I saw there's another new Overwatch champion revealed.
Yeah, the widow.
The Junker Queen.
Yeah.
Junker Queen. Something W. An existing one. You definitely haven't played.
There's a W one. They also did a huge D4 reveal. So like we talked about the fact that I wanted to see it open world, and they announced that it'll be open world. With like raid bosses and stuff like that, or like world boss and stuff like that in it. So a bunch of information coming out. They also made a tweet too, which I don't know how much you take this into account, but D4, at least monetization wise, they will have a shop, but it'll be nothing but cosmetic items and then full expansions in the shop. So base game, full price, it's all in there. So yeah, some cool games of it. There's a huge, my Twitter feed right now is going crazy about Starfield, which is the Bethesda. It's like the new Skyrim, but it's space Skyrim, I guess you could space say. Rim. Yeah. So it's the new Skyrim, or what's their other IP that Bethesda is? Did they do the Fallout games too?
Yeah.
So it's like their new world that they're building, for Starfield. So Starfield was announced, I think, like 3 or 4 years ago. And now they've done a full reveal of some more details, some better details about what it's actually going to be. So,
yeah.
All coming out of Microsoft. I forget Microsoft owns all those studios. They're about to own Blizzard. They own Bethesda.
They're going
to
be the Disney of games.
God, it's going to be, there's going to be, just like there's only like, what is it? There's 5 media companies in the world. There's going to be like 4 game companies in the world at the end of this. So,
at least we'll always have indie games.
Maybe. There's not many indie movies anymore. So at least
movies. I mean, I feel like it's far more difficult to make a movie by yourself.
That's true.
Than it is to make a game by yourself, just due to the nature of, like, if you're talking at least like live action movie, right?
Yeah.
You need multiple people involved that can act.
Exactly.
So games, you don't need that, but also games are maybe a little bit like the umbrella is a bit broader. Like if you talk narrative storytelling, obviously people do things by themselves all the time. We call them books.
Fair enough. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. Well, I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show for today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. And if you enjoyed this show and you want to support all the work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, we would invite you to come and join the Discord. It is a great place to come and hang out. Maybe react to some of these Summer Game Fest announcements and or whine about how it's not PoE, so you don't like it.
God. Oh yeah, it's
shots
true.
Fired. Shots That's, fired. God, But that is gonna be it for our show today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.